Vote this today is a big day. It is May 10th, 2017. I'm opening up the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Public Safety. It is a public hearing on House Bill 5034, the Department of Public Safety Standard and Training. And I understand that the director is here. Are you coming up alone, or are you bringing others with you?
Perhaps I'll bring others today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Winters and members of the committee. For the record, Eric Gavlikson, I'm the Director of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, more often known as DPSST. Sitting next to me is Denver Peterson, who's our Business and Information Services Division Director, Michelle Lisper for Department of Administrative Services, Chief Financial Officer Office, and then in the audience, we also have our Training Division Director, Mike Leloff, and then also Michael Anderson, our Facilities Supervisor. What we're going to do today is kind of share with you what's happened since we were here last as part of our Phase 2 budget presentation. We've kept this high level, but obviously we're glad to answer any questions you have along the way. So just a quick overview about our training programs, which is where the bulk of our expenses are. We do provide a 16-week basic police class for city, county, state, tribal, university police officers. They all come to the same academy in Oregon. We offer a 6-week class for city county corrections officers. We offer a 5-week class for parole and probation officers, and they come back for an additional week if they carry a firearm, because not all parole and probation officers do carry a sidearm. We offer a 2-week class for 911 operators and an additional class week of training for medical dispatchers, which are 911 operators that provide pre-arrival instructions before fire rescue arrives on a scene. Also, something new is the OLCC Basic Regulatory Specialist class that was as a result of legislative action. That's 4 weeks in length. And then for officers that have been out between 2.5 to 5 years or that are coming to Oregon from another state seeking reciprocity, either police or corrections, they attend a 2-week class that we call Career Officer Development, or COD, which is a refresher class primarily on Oregon laws, because use of force, vehicle code, criminal code are different to our state. So that's what that class is all about. So the next class slide, again, we shared this with you in phase one, but I'll just kind of give you kind of a summary of how many students we've seen enrolled. So this is class by year. So you can see last year was a significant year for us. 401 basic police students came through the academy, 155 for corrections, 47 parole and probation, 122 911 operators, 50 medical dispatchers. OLCC had 13, that's a small group. It's just not a big group that we had. And they just don't have those numbers. There's less than 100 agents across the state, so they just don't see the large numbers the other constituent groups do. 45 came back into the profession or came to Oregon from another state in police, and 6 for corrections. So that's kind of a quick snapshot there. This is a slide that I wanted to spend a little bit of time with you, because this, I think, captures the discussion, as does the slide after this, about how busy we've been in 15-17 and the work that we've done with you, with LFO and CFO on impact. We included Basic Police 351 there in purple, which is a class that started in June, but the bulk of it actually ended up in this biennium. So we cross over at some points, calendar years or fiscal years. All of the classes that you see in black were the classes that were included in our current service level budget for 15-17. So that's what we started the biennium with, anticipating to deliver. As you know, we talked about the boom of hiring, the large number of retirees, and the next group of classes in red were an e-board request that we made and that you approved, where we added 4 additional classes to meet the demands that we saw out there with our partner agencies. And then we had another request just after the first of this year for more classes for both police and corrections, and those are the 2 light blue ones that you see there. And then you'll see Basic Police 371 is in purple, because, again, that's going to start in next month, and it'll go in the next fiscal year. That is there to kind of show you the transition. And then you see 372, 373, 374, 375 are in the next fiscal or biennial year. So that's how we've color-coded that. The one thing that you're probably also looking at is that number 40. That's the number of students we can take per Basic Police class. You'll notice that those classes have all been running at 40. One of the things that we've discussed with you, and then I know chiefs and sheriffs and state police have discussed, is the waiting time it's taking people to get in. We just filled up the class that starts next week, Monday. We had one vacancy in that. That was filled. And then we had four vacancies in the class that starts next month, and that was filled also on Monday. So we're now enrolling people into August and September, and you'll see even into November. So the retirement numbers and the attrition, as well as the hiring, is continuing. And that's just kind of a snapshot of what you're seeing happening across the state. And I'd be glad to answer any questions on this if you have any.
Yes, Representative
Clouseau. So I apologize for being a little late. So of the 40, mm-hmm. is that the graduation rate, or have we lost some?
So that's enrollment number. So that's what we started on day one. We mm-hmm. will lose people either because of conduct, because of academics, or because of injury. So not every class of 40 graduates at a class of 40. Usually the average would be 38. It's still pretty good. Yeah. But what we might see is a student that has a learning difficulty might not have been involved in testing for years. They struggle. They academically fail out, but their agency wants to bring them back. So we'll bring them back for another class. Okay. We may see pre-existing injuries that get re-injured at the academy. A lot of times college or high school athletes that had a pre-existing ACL tear or something where that happens again, they come back. And then conduct, they go home. They're the only way they come back is if the board approves them coming back. Thankfully, we don't have a lot of conduct issues, but we do from time to time have that.
Thank you.
Okay. So the next slide is a smaller group of people, but equally important, and this is how many city-county corrections we've trained, and we're using the same color coding chart, if you will. So you'll see the purple BCL-19. That was a June class that, again, carried over into 15-17. The black classes are what we had in 15-17 budget. Then we, again, through the e-board request, added those two classes in red. And then we are in the July 17. That'll be the next class in the next fiscal year. Of 40, and then you'll see BCL-29 again in green. That's also in the next biennium of 10. But again, there you're seeing that the wait time is still there, but not at the over 90 days. So we're keeping up with it. So the next class is the slide, is the one that we're most concerned about. And I know that you were also when we appeared in front of you for phase one. And this shows where the future projections are lining up with the number of people eligible to retire and that are actually retiring. So you'll see the bars, 783 were the total number of basic students enrolled last year. You'll see in 2017, the gold bar shows 713 are currently enrolled into this year. And then we're projecting another 140 that will be hired at the end of the biennium. And then you'll see in 2018, the projection that we show based on the number of people that are eligible to retire could be at 916. So this is a quick chart that shows to you 17-19 co-chairs, governor proposed budget. So kind of working left to right, you'll see 15-17 start. Then you'll see the e-board request, the plus four for police, plus two for corrections. Then you'll see the 2017 Senate Bill 5508 was plus two for police, plus one for corrections, with a final that we're ending up at the end of June, 19 basic police classes, 9 corrections classes. Governor's rec budget proposes a reduction down to 15, so a reduction of 2 police, 1 corrections, and then you'll see 7 there, and then the co-chairs lines up with that now with the most recent release of 15 police and 7 corrections classes going into 17-19. So the wild card that we have been very honest about is if what we project actually happening happens, we'll probably be coming back to e-board and asking for additional classes as we did in 15-17. Because if those numbers become real, 15 and 7 is not going to meet the workload that we're seeing at the academy. So one of the things that you asked about last time is what are we doing to help? What is public safety doing? Times are tough for law enforcement. A lot of people don't want to work in law enforcement. We are very honest that while it's tough to find recruits, other businesses are having the same struggle finding people to hire. But it doesn't mean law enforcement isn't finding people that are dedicated and committed. So we did host, since the last session that we had with you, a public safety career fair at the academy. We had more than 30 agencies participate. Our numbers were a little bit lower, but the quality of applicants applicants from the recruiters was higher. So they liked the people that were coming in to meet with them. A lot of them were ready to go to work, and they were very excited. We also had a great partnership with the Oregon Employment Department, also the Oregon National Guard, and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. So they sent flyers out for us to all of those people to get them into the career fair. And we're basically making people aware of the opportunities. As I shared with you in my last appearance, about 30 to 40% of our basic classes are veterans, people that have served our country and now want to serve their communities and are being hired in local public safety positions. So one of the other, I'm sorry.
Yes, Coach Winters.
Thank you, Coach Winters. So I'm still thinking on the math, on the previous slide on the increase in classes or the potential for requesting more. Is my math correct on this? So if we're proposing funding at 713, so enough classes for that, if you actually have 916, then you know, at 40 per class, you're projecting that you might come back and request another five classes. And at, am I, or four, wait, no, 40, yeah, for another five classes. And then at the math of that, at 40 students at roughly $16,000 per student for the 16-week, that's $3.1 million. So are you prepping us saying that you think you might come back and ask for an extra $3.1 million?
Co-chair Winters, co-chair Stark, possibly. And why I say that is I don't know if the number of people that are eligible to retire will retire. So some leave because they can or they want to. Others might still have kids in school where they just can't retire because they're still, you know, trying to figure out how to cover expenses. But our projections are showing the number of people that can retire is significant. What we have done in this current biennium, which is our plan for next biennium, which I think helps, is if you look at it from this way, we've got these classes spread out over 2 years. Mm-hmm. What we did last year is push classes from the back forward to meet that hiring bubble. And then what we did is ask for e-board dollars to fill those classes that we move forward into the back end of the biennium.
Right.
Follow up.
Thank you. And so this was going into where you're beginning to go on your next slide as far as the recruitment. Do you think that you actually, as a whole, that we are recruiting at a level to actually fill those numbers and therefore then warrant the request for additional if we got to that point? Like, do you anticipate being able to recruit another 916?
Co-chair Winters, co-chair Stark, I would say yes, and here's why I will say that. And let me bounce back to slides. If you look at number of students enrolled for basic police in 2016 of 401, when we canvassed our stakeholders on how many people they were looking to hire, that number was 500 in 2016. They met that mark of filling 500 positions, so 401 is the bulk, but the remainder carried over into the first quarter of 2017. So there's 500 vacancies that they said that they were looking to recruit. They filled all those vacancies. Now they had to work harder, so people didn't make it through background, people didn't make it through psychs, they didn't make it through medicals, some of them didn't make it through the academy, but the agencies that said they're looking to fill 500 slots, they filled 500 slots.
Thank you.
So let me jump back, and I apologize for going back and forth. So we talked about Public Safety Career Fair. This is something else that we're doing in partnership with the Oregon State Police, the Oregon Chiefs, and the Sheriff's Association, which is how do we recruit? And what we know is that some people are born recruiters. Some people are made to be recruiters and may not like it. Some people know how policing works but have never been asked to be a recruiter. But one of the things we looked at with electronics is what can we do as a state to let people know about the opportunities. I know Representative Peluso, when you were chief, Gresham posted their jobs on LEDS, mm-hmm. but it was a very obscure web page to figure out where it was. So in working with Oregon State Police, they were very great in this discussion. They go, we said, what can we do that's easy for people to brand? How can we get people to find this web page? So super easy, they found OregonPoliceJobs.com. So all you have to do is go to OregonPoliceJobs.com. All of the postings are there. You'll see on the left, we have a link to the job. It says the title, what the status is, who to contact, including their email address, their phone number, and also what the salary is for that position. We know that people are looking to come here from other states. We have people in state looking to be law enforcement officers. We may have people in law enforcement looking to move to a different area because they want to help their parents out. They want to move because their spouse has moved. So we also have in-state movement. But this gave us a vehicle to basically market the whole state as a law enforcement career. It's worked out pretty well, and this has only been up for 3 weeks right now under the new webpage name.
Great.
What we're also doing as part of that is we're building on that. And what we've coined is 208 agencies, one team, one mission, keeping Oregon safe. We're sharing this across the state with our partners so that when they go to recruiting fairs, so they might be recruiting for Portland Police Bureau, Gresham, could be Grants Pass, it could be Bend, but they can also brand coming to Oregon. So this will take them to the webpage. What we're doing is working with our partners is flipping the pictures through. So we're going to have pictures from Eastern Oregon, Central Oregon, Southern Oregon, Coastal Oregon. So we kind of show the whole state and the different types of law enforcement functions. But this is the first one we started. And I think Representative Barker, you'll connect with that picture right in downtown Portland.
Can I make an observation, in recruiting across the country and looking at the diversity of Oregon now? If I flip to the second page in the One Team, One Mission, I don't see diversity in that picture.
Truth.
Co-chair Winters, you are spot on, and that's an issue that we're doing. These are our first two slides, and that's exactly the discussion that we're going to have, and we have. We are looking for diverse pictures from our partner agencies so that we can show that there are people of color, there are women, there are all different types of people in our state doing this job. So you're spot on. Yeah, and we acknowledge that. So this segue to the slide, One Team, One Mission, Recruit Your Backup. This is something we're doing within law enforcement, which is that we know from our work that the best recruiters are people that do the job and love the job. So again, this is something that we're giving students at the academy. It's as simple as a postcard. What we're going to add on to this, and again, these are the prototypes. On the back of these cards are going to be a map of Oregon, because not everybody knows every part of Oregon. When we hosted our career fair, there were people that had no idea where Grants Pass was. There were people that didn't know where Bend was because their whole focus was the metro area or the valley. So we want on the back of the postcard to also show how big the state is and where the different places are. But your comment about the pictures, we're spot on, and we're going to make that right.
I would hope so, because you're actually recruiting across the country, which should depict the image of Oregon.
Yes.
Oregon has more and more become a very much a diversified state. So, if I'm somebody from Texas or some other place across this country, I would really get a real picture of what Oregon looks like. I often still get when I travel across this country, and they'll say, oh, gee, do you really have African Americans in it? Do you really have Latinos? I'm serious, because they only see that image.
Yeah.
And that is not the image of Oregon.
We agree.
Senator Frederick, and then to Co-Chair Sparks.
Yes, I'm actually curious about where you are recruiting across the country. One of the problems I run into is that there's always an effort to try to go to HBCUs and mark the box and say I've been to an HBCU without recognizing, having grown up in HBCUs, a lot of the kids who are there don't know about Oregon, are not necessarily comfortable in the state, and in fact are often there at the HBCUs because they feel much more comfortable in a particular environment.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know when you get a chance about where else you're recruiting, because there are other places that you might have much better chance.
Senator Frederick, would you please explain your acronym?
Sorry, I need to put some money in. Historically black colleges and universities. And I basically grew up on those campuses. Howard University, Southern University, Morehouse, Spelman, right. Tuskegee, Purview. All those places, FAMU, I better say FAMU, I have a couple of relatives who would be upset with me. That's the kind of thing that, but they are always being addressed. They're always putting, they've always got a table out for somebody. But there are small colleges and universities in the Midwest and other places that have a diverse student body that are not acknowledged or even approached.
Right.
So I would encourage you to look at those if possible. I think you may have a greater chance at getting folks to come to Oregon if they feel comfortable in some of those small schools.
And Co-Chair Winters and Senator Frederick, You're spot on, and this ties into the picture and the image. If people don't see themselves in those pictures and in that career field, they're not going to see that as a job for them. So that's where we want that alignment to happen and to do that. I know, for example, recently when I was on a flight to see my mom back east, there were recruiters from the Portland Police Bureau going to John Jay College in New York as part of a career fair, so they're reaching out there. I know that we have a member of our staff going up to Fort Lewis McChord for a career day for public safety. So we're trying to reach out to the military bases. I know state police has done that as well. But the other answer is that we're all, DPSST is not the primary recruiter for local law enforcement officers. That's city, county, OSP. But we're trying to help network people and build that relationship because in some of the smaller agencies, they're just as important as the ones that have a recruiter. But really what we're changing is the optic of how we recruit. And we know now if we're waiting for people in college, it's too late. They've made up their mind what they want to do. So Washington County, for example, they have deputies go to the high school and even to the middle school to talk about careers. We're doing the same thing in a lot of other agencies. We have a great partnership with the Oregon State Police with a camp that we host at the Academy through the American Legion. So each Legion post gets to send a teenager to the Academy for a week where we run a mini Academy for them so they can experience the Academy. We also invite a lot of the Cadet Explorer programs to come see the Academy so they could see what the experience is all about. So I think the answer is we're trying everything, but we really have very few full-time recruiters in our state. Portland Police Bureau has a few. Oregon State Police, I know, has two. Salem has one. Marion County has one. But a lot of other agencies, it's a person that's assigned to go to a career fair, recruiting fair, some kind of outreach. So I think we're really trying to do everything, but bring people here, but also to showcase all the different opportunities that we have here.
Coacher Stark.
Thank you, Coacher Winters. So looking at your Oregon Police Jobs website, which is kind of nice and convenient, so you have roughly 55, 56 postings there. For all those postings, how many qualified applicants will you actually get for those? And by qualified, meaning they pass the basic exams.
Coacher Winters, Coacher Stark, that's the challenge that we're all facing. So I would say that the net is bringing in a lot of applicants, but how many actually make it to the end where they're shaking hands with somebody saying, we want you to be an officer, varies. We have had some agencies, Oregon State Police, have doubled down their efforts. They're doing a good job of finding people. They're hiring both laterals and new officers, brand new officers. We're seeing other agencies have people that fail out on the background investigation. They fail out in the psych. They fail out in the medical. So they're having to do a lot more work. But all of those positions right now, they're looking to fill. But I think the outcome will vary based on the agency and based on the applicants that they see. City of Salem, for example, recently, Senator Winters knows this, it's been hit and miss. They've had 20 people that they like. They send them through, and at the end, they might have four that they can hire that make it through the process. And that doesn't mean that they don't need to fill the positions. That doesn't mean that they're going to let them go vacant, but they're going to have to go back out and recruit more again to get them there. The other thing I'll share, Representative Stark, is that we're also seeing some of the private sector techniques come in to Oregon, signing bonuses for police officers coming from other agencies. If you're the person that recruits the officer, you get a bonus if they make it through probation. So not unlike what we've seen with teaching and nursing, but that's what some communities have to do to get applicants. We also see the laterals continue. Agencies will pay more to get a trained lateral to come work for them, but that means that other community now is down that officer that they have to fill.
Is that because of the challenges of nationally recruiting, given some of the things that have happened across this country, which have not been positive, which have, I think creates a real challenge in recruiting officers, not only in Oregon but across the country.
Mm-hmm. Coacher Winters, members of the committee, I know and we know that there have been incidents across the country that haven't looked very good for police officers, and we've had police officers make very bad decisions.
But also I think the challenges of individuals in looking what happens to police officers.
Correct.
So, did.
Yeah, and Co-Chair Winters, we're very honest with our students. Everybody today is a reporter. Everybody could pick up an iPhone and take active video and post it online within seconds and edit and cut and paste a story that may not be the real story of what happened. So I think across the country and across our state, there's probably a lot of kids that come home and say they want to be a police officer, sheriff's deputy, and state trooper, and their mom and dad might say, do you really want to do that today? What I do know is that we are still finding talented people that want to serve their communities, and we're having to work harder to get them, but people are being hired, and we're still doing the work across the state. So we recently went through a Secretary of State performance audit. It started in November 18th. It was completed March 7th, 2017. They came in and looked at a lot of different angles of the agency. They looked at our use of force training. They looked at our partnerships. They did random calls to board members, constituents, stakeholders about our agency. They looked at professional standards. They looked at our academy enrollment, and they looked at our scheduling. So they didn't find any issues there. In a lot of cases, we're very proud that when they contacted other states to look at our state, those states benchmark against us for how we do business here. In professional standards, they saw Oregon as an example of how you hold law enforcement officers accountable. Not that our system is perfect, but they saw that we are active in this discussion about making sure that we have professional standards for our law enforcement partners. At the end of the day, the one thing they did find was our weapons and ammunition inventory and management. Not that any guns or ammunition were missing, but we need to do a better job of how we manage those inventory systems. An example I'll give you is in our regional training program. I may be the regional training coordinator in Central Oregon, and I have a case of ammunition weapons, which we still consider a gun, that we're using for active shooter training, but that I handed off next week to the Southern regional coordinator, but there's no documentation that I handed that kit off with those weapons to that coordinator other than, you know, I gave it to them. So what they recognize is that we have a tighter system of where those guns are at all the time, and we acknowledge that. The same is true on how we move ammunition around our campus. So on a pallet in a range versus on a pallet in a shelf where it's controlled, just those type of things that we're committed to doing. And out of the whole audit, those are the things that they found. So we're committed to making that right, and we should. The next thing I wanted to share with you, and I planted some seeds with you during phase one, but our mental health work group that we help facilitate between the chiefs and sheriffs has finished its work. Chief Jim Ferraris from the Woodburn Police Department and Troy Clausen, the undersheriff from Marin County, co-chaired that committee. More than 40 participants came in to help us, and it wasn't just law enforcement. It was mental health. It was behavioral health nonprofits. It was Oregon Health Authority. And we basically sat together and tried to identify how do we create a scalable policy framework that can be used anywhere in a state for local communities and our public safety partners to discuss responding to people in crisis. And then the other part of that work group was to look specifically at training. The basic training we offer police officers, the need for advanced specialized training, crisis intervention training or CIT training, and then also the ongoing professional development training. I'm going to share with you a few slides, but one thing I'll mention here on CIT training, which is the 40-hour Memphis model that you've heard a lot about. When we started our effort with the Oregon Health Authority, we had less than six dozen communities in the state that had dedicated crisis intervention team personnel that were trained to respond to calls. We're currently working in partnership with more than a dozen other counties that are implementing CIT programs. We've been very honest that this is not a one-size-fits-all situation across the state. It has to be organic because the resources are different in each county. We can't take what exists in Klamath and replicate what Multnomah County has. Klamath has to identify its own local resources. One example I'll use here in the Valley is Marion County has a very strong program. Polk and Yamhill are developing crisis intervention team programs. So what we're able to do with our partnership and the dollars OHA gives us is we've partnered Yamhill and Polk with Marion to help them stand up and get the training. So then downstream we'll have a regional approach so that one agency delivers the training, then the others can come over the bridge or vice versa and get that training to keep those teams filled up. So this is a change to the 16-week basic police curriculum. And Senator Frederick, this also ties into the discussion and a question you had during phase one. This is what our new basic police model looks like for mental health training. So we'll have an introduction during week four. Then you'll see we have an optional class from NAMI, the National Association for Mentally Ill, which is in our own voice. That's where they bring mental health consumers in to meet with our students. That is an optional class because NAMI cannot guarantee that they'll always have a person available to come in and do that. that. While we would like it to be part of the core, they just cannot guarantee that they'll have people available, so we had to make that optional. Then we go to scenarios in week 7, interacting with people in health. You'll see unit 4 is legal considerations. Unit 5, and this is the question, we're specifically dealing with de-escalation of people in crisis on week 8 for 3 hours. Week 9, we go to 4 hours on veterans awareness and issues. And then in week 11, we have 4 hours specifically on mental health training in scenario base. The one asterisk I'll put next to this is de-escalation scenarios, interacting with veterans. While this is focused here, happens throughout the basic course. So we have also de-escalation scenarios dealing with veterans in use of force and confrontational simulation and vehicle stops, and also in our final week of calls for service. So this is focused specifically on this topic, but we've also embedded it throughout the basic program. So those students, and the analogy I use is a jukebox. They don't know what scenario they're going to get and what that role player is going to do. So they're interacting with people in different scenarios throughout the basic police course. So were there any questions on mental health? Okay. The other thing that we've worked on, and I know Representative Peluso has a bill on this, which is officer-involved domestic violence. Here again, we were asked to work with the Chiefs and Sheriffs Association. The Chiefs and Sheriffs developed a statewide policy framework for dealing with officer-involved domestic violence. We know that it's an issue out there, and we want to make sure we're proactively addressing it. The policy framework was created and distributed, but then there's also a training element that we've been asked to come in and help with. In April, Clackamas County Sheriff's Office hosted the Child Abuse Summit up at the Jansen Beach Red Lion. More than 600 people came in, and that specifically had a segment on dealing with officer-involved domestic violence by Mark Wynn, who's a national expert on that. We are also in the process of creating a specific training video for officer-involved domestic violence that we'll send out to every law enforcement agency in the state of Oregon that embraces and builds on the policy framework. And then we're also doing regional training opportunities. So with chiefs and sheriffs to get the leadership team, their supervisors aware of domestic violence issues involving law enforcement officers, and how do we handle those sensitive cases, which are very important that we do it right. So switching gears to fire programs, and this ties into a question that Representative Huffman had, which is, we've come in front of you a few times for permission to apply for grants and to receive grants, and it's been kind of an ongoing issue. So last year, we received a grant from the FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, out of Assistance to Firefighters grants to replace the flammable liquids props that you see here. You'll see that the nighttime picture is a little bit more exciting than daytime. But we received funds to purchase 2 of these flammable liquids trailers, which was out of FY15. So those are out to bid currently, and you've given us permission to accept that grant, so we're in the process of doing that procurement. Also, as part of the same grant, we received permission to purchase 2 additional car fire props. You might think it's not a big deal, but very few neighbors want people, fire stations, to light cars on fire behind them anymore because of the environmental issues, not only the air, but also the runoff. So the industry has met the challenge, and they have created actually car fire props that are safe. They burn gas. We can do hands-on training, make it realistic. And we are in the process, along with those 2 flammable liquids trailers, of replacing or adding 2 additional car fire props. So that was an FY15 grant that we received and that you gave us permission. So then we came earlier this year and asked to apply for a FEMA grant in FY16 federal year to replace our 53-foot mobile fire training unit. Think of a tractor trailer that is deliberately made to look like a house that has a roof that comes out of the top. And we've had this unit for more than 10 years. We use it quite a bit. We've trained thousands of firefighters, but it's starting to show its age. We are very fortunate that we received notice from FEMA that we have been approved to receive a grant of just over $450,000 in that ballpark to replace this unit. And that'll be federal FY16 dollars. And we're working with LFO staff to kind of work out when that procurement can be finished. But we're going to get the first one out of the way before we go out to bid for this one. And this is just an inside look of what it looks like. It looks like a house. It's crude. It doesn't have a lot of furniture because it gets burned, but it's metal furniture that we can move back and forth to fire stations across the state. So as we continue with pictures and fire things, we've worked really well with the Office of State Fire Marshal, and you've had a lot of discussions about oil train response. DPSST was asked if on our campus the Fire Marshal's office could put a crude oil tanker on our campus. We already have 3 rail cars in partnership with Union Pacific Railroad. We said we'd be glad to do it. So if you wonder what it looks like to move a rail car down a road, that's the first part. Those are the trucks that go underneath it. And then this is what it looks like when they set it up to look like a derailment. So Union Pacific and their contractors did a great job. They had pictures of what derailments look like. We know that nobody likes responding to them, but we wanted to make it as realistic as possible. So they brought in the rail, they put the ties in, they put the gravel in to make it look like a responder would be arriving on an oil train car that's flipped over. So that's a resource now on our campus that the fire marshal's office is going to be using to help train first responders on responding to these incidents. Earlier this year, you approved an e-board request that we had for 2 critical infrastructure needs. The first one was replacing our fire alarm system. Our campus is just over 10 years old. It looks great, but it started to show age. So we had an emergency request to replace our fire alarm system. We've completed the procurement. We've finished 3 out of the 5 buildings already. We have full testing scheduled, and we see no problem in meeting the demand to get this done by the end of June. So that's in process. The other e-board approval is part of this package was our lighting inverters. We completed a procurement. We awarded a bid yesterday afternoon. The manufacturer is going to build those units to our specifications, and that project is also on target for completion by the end of June. So our facilities folks are doing a great job getting these things replaced, and obviously life safety is an important issue for our campus, especially with dormitories. So some things we're looking at for the future. We talked about the mental health partnership with OHA. We've reached out to them. They would like to continue that partnership with us into 17-19. They would like to give us another $400,000 so we can continue to support CIT classes as well as regional one-day classes on specific mental health emergency situations. And we've been doing those across the state. We are going to, and this is my analogy, take the 16-week basic police class, put it up on the lift, and take it down to the frame and see what we need to do to make it current. We've been running it for 10 years. It's served us well. We've fixed things along the way, but we haven't really taken it apart down to the frame since we've been running that new model at the new academy. So we're going to bring in our stakeholders and community members to see what we need to do in 2017 to meet the needs of Oregon law enforcement as well as the communities we serve in that 16-week basic course. We also are going to do a facilities needs assessment. So we're going to have IT and deferred maintenance. We've shared some of that with you, but the campus is going to be at a place where roofing is going to be an issue in a couple of years, and some other things are going to need to be replaced. We've spent quite a bit of time already, but keeping pace with retirements or hirings. We have a great staff that does a fantastic job every day providing training, but there's only so much bandwidth that we have, so we can move things around, but if we're going to need additional classes, we'll obviously keep you posted on that as we go through the year. Ensuring professional standards and training meet community expectations, a very large discussion, and we shared this with you earlier, but we can't rest on our laurels for training, nor can we rest on our laurels for what professional standards are. As the expectations continue to change, we have to make sure that our standards are meeting their demands. We've spent quite a bit of time this session in the building with both House and the Judiciary talking about how we hold officers accountable, and then also making sure that we're filling any gaps in our current structure on how we do that. We also have our Center for Policing Excellence, House Bill 3194 created that center. Winters, we know that you're very passionate about that. We wanted to share with you.
I have a very passionate chief of police over in Kaiser who's very passionate.
Yes, you do. And he's active with us, and he's on our board, and he's very active in this area. We were just recently asked if we would serve by the U.S. Department of Justice through the NIJ, National Institute of Justice Law Enforcement Advancing Data as Science Agencies Program. So we said yes. It doesn't bring any dollars into our program, but what it allows us to do is to network with other leads agencies to share information. And also they like Oregon because, as we talked about through the Reading 194, we have a centralized academy in our state, and our agencies work really well together. It doesn't matter what color the uniform is or what color their patch is. City, county, state, tribal work hand in hand, and that's unique to other parts in the country, so we're excited about that.
How unique is having the one academy that services and provides training for multiple professionals? In talking with, there's 2 questions. One, how many public academies then are doing similar to what we're doing in Oregon exist? And then how unique are we?
So Co-Chair Winters, member of the committee, we're very unique. We benchmark against other states to do what we do. And we look at Maine, which has a very small law enforcement population. We also look in New Hampshire. They run a similar model where all officers go to the single academy. When we look at other states, they have regional academies where the smaller communities go, but the metros go to their own in-state, in-house academy. So, for example, in New Jersey, you have more than a dozen county police academies, but the city of Trent and the city of Newark does its own. That's true of other larger cities, too, where they just don't go. If you go down to California, there's more than three dozen. Los Angeles County, Los Angeles City do their own. CHP, California Highway Patrol, runs its own academy. The same is true. Texas has more than 200 academies. Some train as few as 20 people a year. Others are large, for example, Dallas-Fort Worth. So we're very unique. And we're excited about that, but it also creates a challenge because we're not training an officer through our basic 16-week course to work in Tualatin or in Salem or in Medford. We're teaching them to work in Oregon. The local agency builds on that through the field training manual. So it's a very unique system, but it works well for us. I think if you look at some significant incidents we've had in Oregon, you see how this works. You saw it during the Umpqua Community College tragedy there, where we had city, county, state officers respond from across the state, and they were able to interact with each other at the flip of a switch because they're all trained under the same model. We see the same thing, for example, at the Malheur Refuge when agencies across the state went in to help the local sheriff's office. We all have the same base of training, and then through a regional training network, we kind of build on that as we do in our supervision mental management course. So it's very uncommon that in Oregon, most police chiefs know each other. All the sheriffs know each other. If you go to some other states, there's chiefs that don't even know other chiefs in the county that they're in because they're so large. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. That's just what we benefit from. And I think that's a very strong network that we have here. And the same is true with the Oregon State Police. They're integrated with that whole discussion. Department of Corrections is integrated, for example, with community corrections and county corrections. So we have a very tight state network here, which is pretty uncommon, but also very impressive. And then the final bullet under Center for Policing Excellence is the partnership we enjoy with the Criminal Justice Commission. And as a result, we created the Oregon Knowledge Bank. Still in its infant stages, we've tied into this with our supervision mental management program, but we're able to post lessons learned online where other agencies can look at different projects they've been involved in and then use it to network as resources with each other. So the other issue I'll share with you is our staff's been working with LFO staff, and we want to clean up some KPMs. KPM number 6 we would like to continue to work on and see if we could update that. What we have now is really old and stale and doesn't make sense about our private security profession, so we're going to keep working through that with Julie. And then the other one that we want to do is quite honestly delete it, and I'll show you the next slide why. KPM 7 was the percentage of constituents that agree or strongly agree that the process for requesting and receiving training profiles was quick and easy. This is the old days where you had to send an email and we would send you back your record. Through the work of our staff, we now have an online information records system. We call it IRIS. Information records inquiry system. Any officer anywhere in a state, any citizen can click in a person's name or their DPSC number, and their training history will show up, their certification history show up, and it'll be right there at their fingertips right away. It's delayed by 24 hours just from a security standpoint because it's not live. But this is something that we've put online now, and this is why we're proposing to just eliminate that KPM because it's no longer needed. The last two slides I'll share with you, and the House and Senate both last week honored our fallen officers. We have 183 officers in the state who have lost their lives in the line of duty. And as you know, this year at the memorial, we added the name of Sergeant Jason Gooding to the memorial. I know the work that you did to honor those officers, all of our officers in the state. We also at the memorial unveiled the 8 highway signs that were approved by joint resolutions, very meaningful to the families and to the coworkers. But we want to let you know that we appreciate the time that you took to honor the fallen. These are 2 quick pictures from last week's ceremony. And that's the riderless horse there passing the memorial, but a very emotional event. But we wanted you to know that that's important for the families and the agencies out there that you remember. So thank you. So that, Madam Co-Chair, is our phase 2 update, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Questions, comments, accolades? Yes, Senator Frederick.
I want to thank you for the mental health aspect. I should make it clear that my wife does the In Our Own Voices presentation. It's really something that you should see. It's really quite amazing. It's impressive because it's both video and a person talking with you.
Right.
So you're getting a sense of it being a real situation, not something that somebody has theatrically put together for you.
Right.
So I would encourage you that. But continuing that whole effort is important, and understanding the resources that are available to folks who are dealing with mental health issues is important, not just for those suffering, but for those who might be able to help them.
Okay. Thank you.
Any additional questions, comments, accolades? Well, with that, Julie, do you have a comment before we close?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to let everyone know that tomorrow we will hear from the Criminal Justice Commission, and also tomorrow the trees outside the Camperdown Elms are scheduled to be moved. And we've been assured that it won't be very noisy, but it probably will be very interesting. So I just wanted you all to be aware that if, you know, out of the corner of your eye, you see a tree going into the sky, that's what that will be.
And when they were moving trees on our side earlier this week, some of the members got some real nice video of them moving, and it's really quite something to see how they're able to actually move these trees. So
my office is just above here, and I've been watching them do this process. Do we know what time that's going to happen?
Representative Sanchez, I don't know what time, actually.
Okay.
But be on the alert.
Yeah.
We may issue an APB.
I can set up my iPad looking out my window, and we can do a live stream, and we'll just pull it up right here. We won't even have to look out the window. We'll just watch it online.
Go on Periscope.
Yeah. Well, I do want to thank you for a very outlined presentation in phase two, and hopefully we will be able to get, you know, your budget scheduled soon. I know that everybody's kind of waiting for work sessions, so hopefully we will begin to get the go-ahead. And so if there's no further business, we are adjourned.
Cool. Thank you.
We like it.
Fabulous. All right. I will send you the person. All right. I will send you the person.
We like it.
Fabulous.